Hello, everybody. My name is Tula Carrasco. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is November 27th, 1991. I am sponsored, and I sponsor other women. And I got sober using this book, which is a big book with a cover on it. And I think I may have said this before, but I'm going to say it again, that a big book that is falling apart is sometimes carried by someone who isn't. And I got a million of them. I'd like to thank Billy H., who hornswoggled me into doing this deal back when we were together for a day of sharing in Lynchburg. And it's lovely to meet your wife, Lynn, and Ashley W. Yes, it's so lovely to see that you're still hanging around these rooms. And your smile has gotten even goofier, which is wonderful. It's a wonderful testament to this program, because when I got here, I did not have a smile on my face. And I was at the end of my rope, and I was suicidal. It was either suicide or Alcoholics Anonymous. And both were looking equally bad. And so what I'm supposed to do is tell you briefly what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. It's so nice to have. And my friend Laura came with me. Laura S., thank you for sharing the ride. Such a privilege to be here. You know, there was a time when nobody asked me to be. They told me to go away. And now I get invited to nice places like this to speak in front of sober people. And it's a privilege to be anywhere for Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. So thank you, Billy. My first drink was probably 5-ish, and my last drink was 41-ish, right around in there. And the first drink I do remember, and it was a martini, and I was 5. It was awesome. Yes. And I remember briefly that I got drunk and put my mother's high heels on and went into the bathroom and got her red lipstick and smeared that all over my lips, and then I came on out. And I remember being the center of attention and liking it. So I was all right there. I was an alcoholic before I ever took that first drink. And I remember that feeling. Look at me, look at me, everybody look at me, look how great I am. But really that was covering up the fact that I felt different. And I didn't know it then, but it was really like there was a veil between me and you, and between me and everybody else, and between me and God. But I didn't know any of that then. I just knew that I felt different. And my mother was also, may she rest in peace, one of us, but she never made it to the rooms. And my mother was also a sergeant in the Army, Finnish Army, World War II. And I believe that that was her excuse to drink alcohol after she and my father came to the United States. And I mean, I can't prove that, but I think that if you're a veteran of a war, that's a pretty good excuse to drink. And she used that excuse and drank herself to death. And I was 12 and she was 39. And so our life changed radically at that moment. My sister was 8 and I was 12. And thank God for the, I don't know if you all know who the Masons are, but my dad was a Mason, and so they took us in. And from that moment until the moment I took this book up and put the drink down, I don't think I had an honest feeling, because I didn't want to have a feeling. And that was my excuse not to have feelings as well, you know. Once you've lost a parent, then that definitely sets you apart. Now you're different. Now you're really different. And for me, that was all the excuse I needed. And I think that I suffered from the age of 12 to 19 till I really got started drinking. And I submerged myself into school. And believe it or not, I was a real goody-goody in high school. And that changed quickly after I got to college. But when I was 19, then I really got started into my drinking story. And by the age of 19 and a half, I had almost died already from drinking and blackouts and all kinds of mishaps. And so I did a geographic tour to Finland. And I'm not going to belabor the story because I'd really rather talk about recovery. But just so you know who's standing up here talking to you, I am a real alcoholic. When I drink, I don't know what's going to happen. I can't say if I'm going to have one drink or 10 drinks or 50 drinks or if I'm going to end up in another state or if I'm going to end up in jail or end up with a broken arm. I never know what's going to happen when I take that first drink. And so spent 3 years across the water in Europe and called myself not drinking, but I was using other substances that you put in pipes and smoke, and it's green. And because out of respect for AA, I don't need to talk too much about that at all. Because there may be somebody in this room that's never done any other substance, and if they've only ever drank, I would like to assure you, you are in the right place. You don't have to use other substances to belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was made real clear to me when I first got in here, because I didn't know. I used to say I was an alcoholic, and I today understand that I'm an alcoholic who did other things. For me, that's real important to make clear, because I don't want somebody in here to think they have to use other substances, and somebody might go out of here thinking they don't belong. And, you know, it's okay to just drink. You belong here just fine. When I was 22, I came back to the States, and I fell in love somewhere in the line. I think I was about 25 or so, and I don't know if I could ever fall in love again because that almost killed me. maybe one day I'll fall in love again, but right now I can honestly say that when you fall in love with the wrong person and you're already an alcoholic waiting to just get on that horse and ride, it's a perfect storm. Because if you find a man who likes to beat women and you're a woman who likes to drink, boy, that's a perfect combination, isn't it? And so that became my life for 7 years. And I'm not proud of that, but I also, during that period of time, was unable to graduate from college because drinking kept getting in the way, and I kept changing schools or changing countries and changing men and changing majors and trying to find a place where I could fit. And I've heard, I think it's Bob D. talk about what a dog looks like when they're trying to settle, you know. They keep trying to turn and turn and until they find their spot. That's what I was trying to do. I was restless without a drink and didn't know I was an alcoholic. And for those 7 years in New York, I got involved in some things that I'm not going to share from the podium. But if you can just use your imagination to imagine what happens to women who get out there and who are young and pretty and not very bright about men. So let's just leave that as it is, because we don't need to go into details. That's why we have sponsors, so we can share the things that are the most painful with one-on-one with our sponsors. And I no longer have to impress you with how horrible my life was. I don't have to be the worst alcoholic in the room. Because today I'd like for people to feel compared in and not feel like they're left out, because their story isn't as dramatic as mine. And I used to feel that way. You know, it was all about me. It's always been all about me. And today, I don't want it to be about me. I want it to be about the recovery from me. And there's 12 steps, and they're numbered, and that's what I needed, but I didn't know it. So fast forward to when I moved to Virginia. It was actually running for my life from this man. But at the same time, he knew that if I stayed in the city, New York, any longer, I probably wouldn't have made it. I'm one of those that I don't know what no means. I don't know what stop means. I don't know what, oh, 3 days, isn't that enough? No, let's go one more day. You know, let's see how many days we can stay up without sleeping and smoking cigarettes and drinking and doing other things. And holy crap. I mean, I used to come home looking like death sneaking up on murder. Lost 10 pounds. You know, in 5 days, come home, and yeah, that was great. And be ready to rock and roll after I got a little sleep. So, God, it's hard to believe I used to live that way now. In any case, something happened that scared me during those years, And it was watching other people get killed and get stabbed and all kinds of things. I remember this one guy got arrested for killing three people, and he was found walking down a city street with blood all over him, his shoes on his wrong feet, and he was like, I think he was still carrying the knife. I mean, he was just gone. And he did. He got triple murder. He got triple life. And I thought, that could happen to me. And I looked at that, and I did have a moment of clarity that maybe I need to get out of this city. And I knew this guy. So I did come to Virginia Beach, and that was the end of that lifestyle that I had been living that wasn't legal. And I had a job within 30 minutes of hitting Virginia Beach. And I knew I wasn't in Kansas anymore, you know, but it was a good thing. It was so beautiful down there, and I didn't know anybody, and so I left that part of my life behind me and thought, surely another geographic cure. Didn't work when I went to Finland. Maybe it'll work if I move from the north to the south. And definitely was a different experience, but they have alcohol in Virginia. So I did continue my drinking history and started to get arrested in Virginia and go to jail. And that was a new experience. I had never been arrested before. And see, I used to say things like, I'm not like you people because I still have teeth. I'm not like you people because I've never been to jail. You know, that alcoholic ego, it's amazing. And if you've never been to jail, that's still okay. You don't have to go to jail to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous at all, but I think that's what it took for me to hit that bottom. So I just want to end the drinking portion of this story with a thank you to the police officer who arrested me for my second DUI, because he saved my life, and I didn't know it then, but I really feel with all my heart that he could have taken his gun out and shot me and killed me and thrown me in a gully somewhere. And I still to this day, I remember seeing that look in his eye, like, you know, and I don't know why he didn't. He could have gotten away with it. He could have said, yeah, she was a belligerent, aggressive, alcoholic female, and I had to shoot her. He could have gotten away with it. Why he didn't shoot me, I don't know. Maybe so I can stand up here tonight and tell you that my experience. And even as drunk as I was, I realized that something significant had happened. And when I went to jail that night and saw the judge the next day, and he said 6 months in jail or treatment, I kind of had reached that turning point. And I said, well, no door number three, is there? So I did choose to go to treatment. And I would like to say here that we have the 12 traditions because we don't have opinions about outside issues, but I think that the treatment for me at that time was a good plan, and I needed to be separated from alcohol for the last time, and I needed to be in an environment where people could explain that I am not a bad person trying to get good. I am a sick person trying to get well, which basically sums up the doctor's opinion, and it really helped me because I heard that. I had thought all my life that something was wrong with me. Why can't I just drink normally? Why can't I just stop? If I could just understand why I drink, then maybe I wouldn't drink. And, of course, that didn't have anything to do with it, because if you're an alcoholic like I'm an alcoholic, I don't need a reason. The reason I drink is I'm an alcoholic. That's the reason I drink. And as I have heard so eloquently put by Don Major on tapes, if I have an infection, I don't have to understand the antibiotic. I don't have to be able to pronounce the name of the pill. I don't even have to like the doctor who prescribes it. I don't have to believe it'll help me. I don't even have to want to take the pill. But if I have an infection and the doctor writes me a prescription for an antibiotic, all I got to do is take the darn pill. And I will get fine. I will get well. And that is the way it was explained to me when I finally did get to Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 steps are the treatment for alcoholism. And if I will take the 12 steps in order with a sponsor, I will get well. And I don't have to understand why the steps work. I don't have to like my sponsor. I don't even have to want to do the steps. All I have to do is present the body, be willing to do a few simple actions, and I will get well. And I was like, really? Oh my gosh, that was my experience. And thank God, that's the good news that this book does carry, is it doesn't matter what my IQ is, and in fact, my IQ almost killed me because I thought I was so smart. I was told real early on in these rooms that nobody's ever been too dumb to get this program, but we bury the smart ones every day. And to get a black dress, because I'd be going to more funerals than I would weddings. And I have, that has been the truth for me, and actually this is my black dress. Yes, because I was also told to dress up from the podium, and that lack of profanity offends no one. And so when I got here, I had a chip on my shoulder, just the size of a, you know, my fist. And you people gently removed that chip, helped me reach up there, remove that chip. And today I have a chip in my pocket instead. You know, and the journey from the shoulder to the pocket is through those 12 steps. And so I would like to talk a little bit about recovery. And in Bill's story on page 8, this kind of describes what happened to me because this is so universal. And he's talking about his moment of clarity in his bottom. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. Trembling, I stepped from the hospital a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit. Then came the insidious insanity of that first drink, and on Armistice Day, 1934, I was off again. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I would have to be shut up somewhere or would stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it is before the dawn. In reality, that was to be the beginning of my last debauch. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. Wow. And in there it says, I was soon to be catapulted. So that tells me that I don't have to wait years to work these steps. I don't have to wait one step a year or one step a month. And it says catapulted. Well, that means, you know, like, wow, like, I don't know, rocketed. And I kind of believe everything that this book says because I'm standing up here before you sober and I haven't had a drink in 19 and a half years. And that's not possible where I come from. I drank every day towards the end. My drinking had progressed to the point where I couldn't even, I remember getting drunk 3 times a day. Get drunk first thing in the morning, pass out, get drunk again, wake up, pass out, and then, oh yeah, one more drunk. And by like 8, 9 o'clock, yeah, I guess I can get one more in. And get drunk 3 times in 1 day. And that was just, it seemed the only normal life by the end of my drinking. And the good news is, I'd like to tell you, is that just as alcoholism is progressive, so is recovery. And, man, I can't wait to see what I turn out to be. I would love to be 50 years sober, if that's God's will for me. And be like one of the cool little old lady that somebody has to help up on a stage. Come here, sonny. Can you help me? And, you know, I love to think about stuff like that. And coming up here tonight with my friend Laura, who has 5 years of sobriety and would make a great speaker, by the way, Billy. It's a privilege to be here because I think that I know where I would be without this program. I know where I was the moment that I walked in here and saw all these smiling faces, and I'm still trembling from treatment, trembling in fear, and not knowing where I fit, because I've never fit anywhere in my life. Everywhere I've been, I never quite fit, and I had to fake it. I had to pretend to fit in. I had to pretend that I knew what you were talking about, and really, I didn't have a clue what you were talking about. I just wanted a drink so I could settle down a little bit inside. And then when I walked into these rooms, here's all these smiling folks and saying, welcome, and I'm like, what is wrong with these people? Don't they know who I think I am? You know, all my life I've been thinking, and I thank myself almost into the grave. I don't know if thank is a word, but it is now. You know, I had almost, thinking is my problem. I don't have a drinking problem today. I got a thinking problem. And so I try to set aside, that's the prayer I said before I came up here, help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, my alcoholism, these steps, and especially you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my alcoholism, these steps, and especially you. God, what a great prayer. I still say that prayer because I'm still in the way so much, and that's what the steps are for, is to get Tula out of Tula's way so that there's room for God. And God to me spells gift of desperation. And so I wish for you that you are desperate enough to follow a few simple suggestions and to find a sponsor and to walk through this book line by line and page by page and do everything it says to do. I mean, there are four chapters devoted just to the first step. You know, we were talking before the meeting about the doctor's opinion and how important that is. We read that a lot in the jail, Hampton Roads Regional Jail, that I'm privileged to go into. And that's where the description of alcoholism is. I'm not a sick person. I'm not a bad person trying to get good. I'm a sick person trying to get well. See, if they had tried to exactly explain that to me my first day, I might not have got it. But, you know, after I had been cleared for a little bit, a couple of weeks, then I could hear the words in this book. So all I can tell you is my life today is beyond my wildest dreams. And I went from being homeless, drunk, who was unemployable and couldn't hold a job and was close to death. I mean, it was suicide by Mack truck on Hampton Boulevard in Norfolk or Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, recently talking with my sponsor, she said, you know, Tula, think about how selfish that is. You were going to jump in front of a big 18-wheeler on Hampton Boulevard, and you were going to kill yourself, and you never even gave a single thought to that truck driver who might have been on his way home to eat dinner with his family. And here comes some crazy alcoholic woman, boom, jumping in front of his truck and kill me. It never occurred to me. And that's the root of my trouble, is I am a selfish, self-centered person. And, you know, it took my sponsor to point that out to me. Because I wouldn't have thought of that on my own, because it's always going to be all about me. That's the problem. So the solution can't be Tula thinking more about Tula. The solution has to be somewhere else. And so today I try to think as little as possible, except when I'm at work. I would like to share a few things that have happened as the result of working these 12 steps in order with a sponsor. I have a relationship with a higher power, with a power greater than myself today that will solve all my problems. And it says it a couple of pages on in Bill's story. All means all. All my problems. I said, no, maybe that's a typo. They can't mean all. But it does, all my problems. And that is the foundation that we talk about in this book, and there are specific and valuable suggestions on how to find that higher power. When I got here, I believed in God, but I didn't think God believed in me. And from the age of 12, when my mother died of cirrhosis, until I was able to form a relationship with a power greater than myself, I couldn't understand that I needed God until God was the only thing left, until I had completely lost everything else, including my self-respect and including being unable to look at myself in the mirror because I was so ashamed of who and what I had become and where alcohol had taken me, and not understanding that I didn't have a choice. I was gonna, and I will drink again today if I let go of that relationship with my higher power, because that's what's standing between me and that next drink is God. And God to me spells gathering of drunks as well. I love that. Gathering of drunks. And today y'all are my favorite people. I love me some sober drunks. And I love the wet ones too, you know. It's a privilege to be here tonight. And I believe that's why I didn't die drunk. Because I did say a prayer that night when I looked up and I said, God, please help me if you're there. Heard somebody else say, this is another prayer, God, if there is a God, help me if there is a me. I'm not sure what that means. But I know that my opinions don't matter in these rooms. It's my experience. And so the experiences that I had out there on the streets of New York and all the bad stuff that happened, that sometimes happens to women in the rooms, is useful today because I can share it with other women one-on-one. I can share it with the women behind the walls, all of whom know what I'm talking about because they've all been there. And so it's valuable. And it says somewhere else in this book that cling to the thought that your dark past is your greatest possession. With it, you can avert death. Death. I can avert death for others. So all that pain, all that sorrow, all that emotional horribleness that is untreated alcoholism is useful. Because there's another one walking in the door who feels the same way that I felt. That what could possibly be the reason? Why am I still here? Why did you even make me? What is the point? And every alcoholic in here knows exactly how that feels. And so it's amazing to me how my higher power works. That all of that crap I went through, you mean you did all that so I could be useful? Thanks a lot. But you know what? It's true. And today I don't have to be ashamed to look in the mirror. Today I can look in the mirror and say, I'm a child of God. And I'm not sure what that even means, but it sounds real nice. And when I talk to people, I remember that that's who I'm talking to. I'm talking to God's kid. You know, and it's kind of a corny way to live life, but it's okay with me. Okay, so I'm sober now. I have a sponsor. My sponsor, Eloise, saved my life without a doubt, took me through this book, took me through the steps. And in my fourth step, if everybody in here has done a four-step, I hope. Has everybody in here done a four-step? Can you raise your hand if you've done a four-step? All right. Yes. And I believe that if I had stopped there, I probably would have drank again, because once I did the inventory, the first one, and I found out my part, and I found out all the amends I had to make, that's not a place to stop. That's just getting started in the steps. And I had to then keep moving. And once I'm faced with the stark fact that I'm selfish and self-centered, I'm a procrastinator, I'm a liar, I'm a cheat, I'm a thief, I can't be trusted, I don't even know how to tell the truth, all these facts are laid before me, what am I going to do with all that? Thank goodness for 6 and 7. Thank goodness for 6 and 7, because what would I do with all that information? So my sponsor said I had to be entirely ready to have God remove those defects that I had uncovered in my inventory. And then I had to ask God to remove them. And I wasn't to know which ones they would be. And as somebody else much wiser than me has said, if there was more to be done in 6 and 7, more would be written. It's only two paragraphs. Page 76, one for 6 and one for 7. Tula, there ain't nothing for you to do but pray and act the way a person would act who had a God who was removing her character defects. What would that look like? Okay, so if I'm selfish, then I have to act in an unselfish manner. I don't know how to do that. So that's why we need sponsors. That's why I need a sponsor, because I don't know how to live. I don't know how to do anything except drink and get arrested and get in trouble and hurt people and steal and lie and get fired. That's what I know how to do. I need help. And she, thank goodness, was there, and she walked me through little by little. Tula, wake up in the morning, take a shower. Find out what meeting you're going to go to today after you pray. Pray. Find out what meeting you're going to go to that day. That's your job. Okay. I can do that. Call me. Okay, I can do that. Go to the meeting. Okay, I can do that. And you have to get a job. Okay, I can do that. And you know, that's how simple my program was in the very beginning, because I didn't have the ability to think for myself. And you know what? That probably saved my life. But my experience is also that the ego comes back pretty darn quick. Mine came roaring back. And my ego said, well, I think I need a boyfriend. And my sponsor said, you are way too sick to have a boyfriend, Tula. You best to just get to stepping with the steps and leave those men alone. And besides, most of them men were afraid of me. when I first got here, and that's okay. So, oh, I have to share this, that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was pretty bitter because of the experiences that I'd had against men. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I fell in love with men again, you know, just in general. Not to sleep with, but as human beings. And I thought, wow, man, these AA guys are all right. And I have friends today that are AA men, and I don't have to sleep with them to be their friend, you know, which is kind of cool. And no money has to change hands, which is even better. And I don't have to try to steal somebody's husband. You know what I'm saying? It's not interesting to me. Why would I want sloppy seconds? I hope I haven't offended anyone. I was told to be polite from the podium, not to swear, and to dress up, wear a dress, and to look like somebody who was a sober woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what I try to do when I'm asked to share. I want to tell you some of the miracles that have happened as the result of these 12 steps. I did go back to college, and I got a degree, and I graduated from ODU. And I have to tell you this. My sponsor, Eloise, had graduated from ODU when I was maybe 2 years sober, and she got her master's, and then she moved away to Arizona. I got to go to her graduation and watch what it looks like when a woman who's sober in Alcoholics Anonymous walks across the stage and picks up a master's degree. And I thought, wow. And she said, well, if you want that, Tula, you can do it too. So that's what we do here, is we help each other, whatever it is, whether you're working at McDonald's or you're working in the White House, it doesn't matter. The point is that we get busy and we get to working and we help each other. And so I did go back to school and I graduated from ODU and then went on and had a wonderful career, which I have today. And December, I got to go to Laura's graduation. Now I'm going to cry. That's God working. And three generations of AA women walking across the stage. I mean, I sat there and I think I cried harder than your mother. Oh, God. You know, it's so wonderful. That's just one miracle. Because all three of us should have been dead. Eloise should have been dead. I know I should have been. And God knows with your story, Laura. Definitely should have been dead. And instead, we get to do these things today. We get to finish our educations, if that's what we want to do. And we get to be useful. Because that was the prayer I had said to God, which I need to finish that part. The night that I really hit bottom and I asked God to help me, I said, okay, God, if you're going to save my sorry, pitiful alcoholic butt, let's make a deal. Only an alcoholic would have an ego big enough to make a deal with God, but this was my deal. All right, God, if you're going to save me, I will work your stupid steps, and I will work your stupid program, and I will do whatever, and I won't drink for a year. But here's what I want. Please make me useful. That was my prayer. Where did that come from? I wasn't even capable of saying that, but I asked God to make me useful. And I said, and if you don't, I'm going to blow my brains out when I get 1 year sober. Well, needless to say, I didn't. And I am very glad to be of use today. In fact, sometimes I think I'm a little too useful. I'm like, okay, God, I'm useful. But the truth is that I have more energy today than I did 19 years ago. And even though I'm 19 years older, that's another thing. We age in reverse. We get better looking. You should have seen what kind of hag I was when I got here. Lord have mercy. I'm telling you. We do get better looking, and it's so wonderful to be alive and to be of service. And I do think that I believe in the three sides of the triangle, unity, service, and recovery. And I have to be active in all three areas to maintain this recovery that I have. So I have a home group. It's the Principals Group of Chesapeake. We meet on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock. It is a literature-based meeting of conference-approved AA literature, big book. We do a traditions meeting once a month, and when there's a fifth week, we study AA history, and we always take something out of one of the books as our topic, and home group members take turns being leading the meeting. And if y'all are ever in Tidewater on a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, I hope you'll come. It's at 525 Kempsville Road, Chesapeake 23320, Harvest God Assembly Church. And it is a lovely home group. In fact, you probably know Jim W. He's the one that founded that home group. And so I have a job in my home group. I have a home group, and that's where people got to know me when I first got here. Because I didn't know how to be friends. I didn't know how to do anything. And so my sponsor said, get a home group and get a job in that home group. And I have always had a job and I've always had a home group in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then she said, get busy. And so I became a greeter, you know. I don't know if you all have seen that cartoon that appeared in the grapevine. And there's this guy standing up there on the mantle. And he's like, and the caption is his wife is talking to somebody. They've asked him to put up the chairs. And, you know, he's so proud because he finally has a job at Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I remember that when they gave me a key to the church when I was a member of the Candlelight group in Norfolk. And I couldn't believe that somebody was giving me a key. Usually people were taking them away. And they gave me a key to that church. And I got to go in there and make coffee. And I got to be there and greet the first people that came in. And I believe those actions are what saved my life. I'm not here because I'm so brilliant. I'm not here because of my IQ. I'm not here because I have the right sponsor. I'm here because I did the actions that are in this book. And thank God. That's the best news there is, isn't it? And finding a higher power is actually an action. It's an action. And what I did was, my sponsor said to me, do you believe that I believe? And I said, well, yeah, you got 6 years. I got 6 minutes. Yeah, I believe you believe. And she said, well, that's all you have to do is believe that I believe. And I did. And that was an action. And then she said, are you willing to go to any length to stay sober today, yes or no? And I said, yes. She said, okay, let's get going then. And that's what I've been doing ever since. And I still do the same things I did when I got here. I believe in giving back. I believe that I have to give it away to keep it. And for me, corrections work has been just a niche that I fell into and I love. And man, those women are so glad to see us when we go in that jail. I can't tell you. And they're like, you're here, it's Thanksgiving, you're here, it's Christmas, you're here. They can't believe it. Well, of course we're here. AA works 24/7, you know, and it has to work 24/7 because otherwise I might drink. I'm not here for you, I'm here for me. But I don't often say it like that. But that's the truth. I go into those jails because I have to. And today I want to. Laura and I would talk a little bit about motives. You know that 11-step prayer where it says, please direct my thinking, especially that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. That's where I'm at today in those maintenance steps. I still have bad motives. You know, I'm not a saint. I'm just 19 and a half years without a drink. And I was told when I first came in, always be nice to the newcomer because one day they might be your sponsor. That's why I kept asking you how you were doing, Ashley. She might be my sponsor one day. You know, and if I keep doing this deal, I'm not going to have to worry about that because I don't have a desire to drink. The obsession to drink has been removed, just like it talks about in the 10-step promises. I love those 10-step promises. I would like to read them. Is that okay? Page 84 and 85. Because we always read the 9-step promises. I love the 10-step promises. We read these in jail. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Wow. And then it talks about the letting up on our spiritual program of action because alcohol is a subtle foe. And we were just talking before the meeting about it. I have a very dear friend. I have lots of dear friends today, but I have one friend in particular who may be walking away from AA. And I can't do anything about that except hope that that doesn't happen. Because as for me, I haven't been to enough meetings yet. I go today because I love AA. I love to go to meetings. How crazy is that, man? Jeez. I never would have believed I'd be saying those words because I asked my sponsor, how many meetings do I have to go to? She said, well, how many days did you drink? I said, okay, I got my answer, 7 days a week. And I did. And today, I still go to lots of meetings. Because why would I want to let up on my program of action if it's working and if I keep getting better looking and younger? Dude, I'm going to keep coming back. Wow, I can't wait to see what I look like when I'm 90. So if you're new or if you haven't been around very long, if you don't think that you belong here, if you think there's something you did that was so awful you'll never be able to tell a soul, I would venture to say that there's probably everybody else in here has felt exactly the same way. Because that's what I feel from my fellow alcoholics, is that we all come in here swearing that there's a dark secret, we're not going to tell anyone, we're taking it to the grave, and it's the taking it to the grave secret that will take me out of here. And do I have time to share a little more? Okay. I had a good friend, and she's passed away now, and she did die sober, who did a fifth step years and years ago and went back out after 6 years because there was something that she left off of that fifth step. And I happened to know what it was because one of my sponsees was a friend of hers, and she came and said, Tula, guess what? So-and-so. And I said, wow, well, I hope she will share that with her sponsor because I would be afraid for her sobriety if she doesn't. And she didn't share it. And this woman went back out and almost died, and then finally made it back in the rooms and died with 3 years of sobriety. But she went through heck because of that secret that she kept. And our secrets will keep us sick, won't they? Today, there's nothing about my life that I can't share with anybody because of that fifth step. Because I was able to look my sponsor in the eye and tell her what I had never been able to tell anybody else. And, you know, she just smiled at me and she said, I love you, Tula. And I thought, oh, my God, what's wrong with her? But, you know, today I understand that because I get to say that to people that I walk with when I hear their fifth steps and they don't believe that God could ever love them, and that, of course, that's not true. We are so blessed in Alcoholics Anonymous to have these steps. And I feel like a baby in this program. I really do. There's so many women in here. I mean, these women sitting up here know more than I do. I don't want to start thinking I know something because I might get drunk. I don't want to start thinking I'm better than somebody because I used to think that way and I couldn't get sober. So today I'm just one of you guys. I'm a part of something much greater than myself. And I do wake up every morning and thank God. And if there's no blood on the pillow, I think it's safe to get out of bed, you know. And I look around and I'm like, wow, another day sober. Another day in paradise, you know, and that's how I feel. And if you don't feel the same way, maybe you need to go back through the steps again. You know, that's what they told me. If I'm not happy in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not doing it right. And it don't mean we don't have sorrow. It don't mean we don't have sad things happen. We do. But even when sad things happen, we don't have to drink over it. You know, it does say in the big book, we promise you trials and low spots. Doesn't say if, it says when. When these happen. And today, I don't worry about anything. In fact, I was starting to tell you, Laura, in the car. You know how Bill talks about a great rhythm underlying everything? A mighty rhythm that underlies everything. And that's my experience now, is I'm starting to feel like, Tula, you can just let go of the wheel. Not while I'm driving, but I can let go of the wheel, the big wheel, because God's got that wheel. All I got to do is hang on for the ride, man. You know, there is a plan with my name on it, and I am supposed to suit up and show up, and more will be revealed. And that's how I feel today. I wake up and go to work. I'm like, yes, I get to go to work. I have the dream job. I really do. Actually, I have two jobs. And that's okay. I'm very, very fortunate. And I hope you will talk to me after the meeting if there's anything I've said that you would like more information on. I'm happy to share more, but I'm not sharing it from the podium because it's not appropriate. And if I want to be one thing today, it's an appropriate woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is the new experience for this old, broken-down drunk that I used to be. Yes, sir. So I want to thank you, Billy. And such a privilege. And I love you. Thank you.